welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven is with me. It's been about a week and a half since we recorded, and the Dodgers are winning lots of games.
Yeah, this podcast is actually sponsored by Stained, and it's been a while since we last recorded. They played 10 games.
I don't think Stained has money to sponsor anything anymore.
That's true. Well, yeah,
they probably do.
They can afford our rates.
Fair.
Yeah. But normally they would have had an 11th game that we would have talked about because we're recording this on a Sunday night. But 2020 is weird, and the Dodgers are playing a 7 p.m. home game on Sunday night. I asked about this a couple weeks ago, and then like Dave Roberts talked about it today too. There's no reason that I can tell that this happened. Like the Dodgers,
hindsight, there's a good reason because of the heat wave, right?
Yeah, I think around Dodger Stadium, it's probably like in the
200s,
maybe 107, 108 today. Woodland Hills got to 121, which was an LA County record. And I'm in West Covina, got to 116. It's 111 as we're recording. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 108 right now as we're recording. So I have two fans and an air conditioning within 5 feet of me. So sorry for the ancillary noise, but daddy's got to stay cool. So, and by the way, that's felt gross.
Speaking of staying hot, we'll talk about the Dodgers and their upcoming week. And I don't know actually we're talking about the upcoming week. We probably will a little bit. But we'll talk about what the week that happened. I have questions from Craig. Craig has a trivia question for me, and you have trivia questions for me, despite the fact that I'm not very good at it. But I'll embarrass myself for the fans.
Yay!
We'll do all of that after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What stuck out for you during this? It's not a winning streak. They have a couple of losses since we last recorded, but they've just looked, it's like everything's just kind of clicking, it kind of looks like.
Yeah, like
it,
we
it helps to play the Diamondbacks and the Rockies.
Yeah, look, the National League generally is bad, and they haven't played like the A's yet, and the one good team in the AL West, like for sure good team. So that's part of it, but also the Dodgers weren't like, they're so deep, until at some point in late August, their three main left-handed bats were all under 200 and a 500 or 600 OPS, and they've been coming on. Jock Peterson is the last to sort of catch on, but they were still winning and being awesome. But then as more and more players are starting to like hit in unison, then they're winning games like they should win, and like, but at also at like an unprecedented rate. I don't want to get too caught up in the like, everyone keeps saying like, hey, well, you know, if this were a full season, well, like yeah, that's because it's a full season and it's really hard to do. Like, just let's, I think we should recognize that for 41 games, they've been unreal, like awesome. And so like that, it's worth appreciating. It doesn't mean they're like a 730 winning percentage over 162, you know, like that's, there's a reason it's hard to do that for 162 because you can't really keep that up. But like the way they won games, like there's been sort of some things that stood out. So they're 30-11 as we record this. They'll probably be, I guess, the Sunday game in the books after we record and by the time this comes out. But they started 30-10. That they lost last night was the news, right? Like they just haven't really lost. Like they were, they won 19 out of 22 before that loss. So it's been kind of crazy. But 30-10 matches their best 40 game start. They also did it in 1977 and 1955 and 88, but 1888, not 1988 that we usually hear. But yeah, also the no team in MLB started 30-10 since the 2001 Mariners, and they won 116 games. So, and they were 31-9. So they couldn't keep up the 750 plus pace over 162. So it's hard. Now I sort of, okay, like the, I guess the one standout, like, so we, since we recorded on the morning of the doubleheader in San Francisco, like after the protest day. Mm-hmm. And then the Dodgers pitched two shutouts that day. And so since we recorded, Clayton Kershaw hasn't given up a run. He was six scoreless innings in that game in San Francisco. He started game one. His stuff was like okay that day, but he sort of like gutted through it. And also it's the Giants partially. But then his start the other day against the Diamondbacks, he actually took a no-hitter into the sixth inning. But it was one of the – he was striking out a bunch of people. I think he struck out eight. And – it was to the point where he was at like 90 something pitches in the sixth and he didn't give up a hit till the sixth. And it was on it could have easily been an error call. Cause Kiki Hernandez, like a good throw would have got the runner, but it was just offline. So like that was odd, but also Dave Roberts was saying after the game, he's like, Kershaw was coming out after six, no matter what, even if he had a no hitter. And Dave Roberts, given his history of taking people out with no hitters, like you can take that at face value. Like I think for sure he would have done it, especially like the way they're sort of handling the whole staff this year. Even like Kershaw gets extra rope, but even that he wasn't going to be able to finish it. But the fact is he's pitching very well. His strikeout rate is his highest since like 2016. He currently has a 150 ERA. So things are going very well in the Kershaw department. There were some wins where they just like bludgeoned the other team, or just like the game wasn't particularly close. They had two like not close wins in Texas against the Rangers, two against Arizona, and then one of the games against the Giants since we recorded. They also had comebacks. One of the games against Arizona was they just couldn't do anything all night. They're down 1-0 into the ninth inning on Wednesday. Mookie Betts hit a home run to tie it, and then the Dodgers gave up a run in the 10th, but then rallied for two in the 10th to win it. So, and then they had a wild back and forth Friday night. It was like basically a battle of the bullpens late. It was like 2-2 in the 7th at one point. The Dodgers rallied for the lead in the 7th. Then the Rockies, Kevin Pillar, of all people, hit a grand slam. And then, but then the Dodgers hit three home runs in the eighth inning, and they won 10-6. So, like, even that's not technically a close game, but it really was. They're so deep. They just keep piling on, and it's really hard. So, the other thing is, like, I guess the bullpen is, like, probably showing a little cracks, but also they were so, like, otherworldly good, like, that wasn't going to keep up. Mm-hmm. So, they had one of my sort of favorite posts during the year is the season in thirds breakdown. And over a full season, it's a lot cooler to do it because it's like 54 game stretches. And like I was going to do it earlier this year, but when the 20th game came around, I think I was like super busy that week. And
you could still do a 54 game wrap up. you know, well, before the season's time.
I was thinking about that, like, I was sort of joking, like, I should just do, like, that, and then let the last week go by and not even update it. But but anyway, so after the 40th game, I decided to do that. And, well, truth be told, I'm also kind of an idiot. Most times on, like, for the weekly review stuff, I calculate the stats myself in Excel. Or not Excel, Google Doc or Google Sheets, I guess. And I use the game logs on Baseball Reference. So I go player by player. And that was sort of my go-to move for years, such that to go from player page to player page, I would just change the player ID and the URL. So, like, I have, like, the player ID for Baseball Reference is first five letters of last name, first two letters of first name, and then 01 for, like, the first player of that, and then 02, 03 for subsequent players. So, like, Joe Kelly is, he's an 05 because there's four other Major League Baseball J.O. Kelly before him, and, like, Chris Taylor is 03. So, like, I memorized all this because I'm a weirdo. but I figured out, like, you could just go to FanGraphs and, like, put in the dates and, like, get that in a single table. And then, so I've been waiting to my usual go-to move for each week is, like, on a Sunday, I'll go through and look up all the stats for the team, for each player through, like, Saturday. And then I'll just add in from the box score Sunday so I can, like, finish it at a reasonable time Sunday night, so I don't have to, like, wake up Monday when the stuff's on site. But now I can just do that with FanGraphs, and it's a lot easier, especially when you're doing, like, a longer stretch of games like this. So it made it easier, so I did another post like that. But the point is, the first 20 games of the year, the Dodger bullpen had a 1.20 ERA, which is, come on, like, that's just dumb. They had a 2.50 FIP, so, like, obviously 1.20 is not a realistic thing to do, but even, like, performance-wise, like, all the underlying stuff was very, very good. 250 is also great. Since then, the last 20 was 335, ERA 435 FIP, so, like, good, but not, like, great, but, you know, and also very passable. But there's, like, cracks at times. Like, Jake McGee, he gave up four runs in an inning in Texas. Caleb Ferguson, he's allowed a few homers, including the grand slam to Pilar on Friday. Blake Treinen had a shaky outing Saturday in their loss. So, but, like, you know, again, as a whole, bullpen very, very good, and, like, they're generally okay with everyone, just about everyone in there. So it's not, like, a concern, but it's, like, it's not as otherworldly as it might have been.
So, talked about the bullpen, but we're going to talk about the trade and the trade of Ross Stripling a little bit afterwards. But just
wait, what?
Yeah, I know, shocker. But they have sort of their set five, and I don't know if it's fair to say they've been better since that first third, but it's looked solid.
Yeah, like, they've been pretty good all year. Like, Stripling even had, like, you know, I'd say two good starts, and he won his first three, but then he was just pretty bad after that. And, like, but for the most part, like, everyone else was fine. Bueller had some shaky stuff early when he was still sort of building back up, but, like, mostly everybody's been fine. Mm-hmm. But the one thing we talk about, how the bullpen, like, look, they've been carrying, like, 10 relievers all year at least. So, like, that's part of, they've been stretching everybody out the bullpen. So they're not getting, like, overworked. Like, they've barely pitched, not a lot of back-to-backs. Nobody's pitched on three straight days. They've given ample rest if a pitcher throws, like, 20 pitches or goes multiple innings. Like, with that many relievers, it's easier to get the work, but also it's caused them to, like, not have any starters go deep. Like, Kershaw obviously gets roped because he's Kershaw. He's gone seven a couple times, but, like, just for the most part, as I see it right now, like, Kershaw and Bueller are the starters they're going to ride in the playoffs. Like, in terms of, they aren't going to get a quick hook. Now, I don't think they're going to necessarily overuse Kershaw like they have in the past to, like, keep him in dangerously too long or, like, use him on short rest or anything. But, like, I do think that those two are the ones that like have sort of a longer rope, where the other three, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, and Julio Urias, like they get pulled like in games where like in you'd think like they would let them go a little bit. So it, just in the time since we last recorded, in Texas, Dustin May had a game where he only threw 80 pitches in 6 innings. It was 2-2 when he left. He was pulled. Tony Gonsolin, 2 days later, this was a little bit of a weird situation. He was pulled after 3 innings. He only allowed a run, but like his third inning was like, it was all stress. Like the bases were loaded like a lot of the inning. He threw 39 pitches in the inning, and then they just yanked him. After that, like that's you see that a little bit sometimes if you have a stress inning. They did it to Julio Urias earlier in the year. They pulled him in the second. That's a little bit of a different situation, but it's part of this just the short, very short rope. Urias again the other day. Actually, this was I can't count Wednesday. 78 pitches in 6 innings. They were up 6-1. Like, how do you not let him throw the 7th in that one, right? 78 pitches. It's not that much. I guess part of it is that he's actually starting tonight, which is the first time all year they've had a starter go on 4 days rest. They've had at least 5 days rest every other time.
Wow.
So maybe that's part of it. But Dustin May again on Friday, 5 2/3, 84 pitches. They pulled him down 2-1 with nobody on base. It wasn't like a situation. But so both May situations, he has like extreme splits in his short career so far. Like lefties hit him hard, righties don't. And both times left-handed hitters were coming up. So I sort of get why he was pulled. But at the same time, he just doesn't throw a lot of pitches. Like I think he threw 88 once and like hasn't really gone over that near it since. Oh, yeah. Also, Tony Gonsolin last night, he was only at 75 pitches through 6 innings in a 2-2 game. And he retired like in the 5th and the 6th, the bat in order, and he was hitting like high 90s velocity still. So like, I think it's clear to see that's what they're doing. I think it's, you know, you could probably stand to let these guys go a little bit sometimes. So it's a little bit frustrating. So the Dodgers to pitch in the 7th inning this season that are currently here because Stripling did it once, but. Oh, yeah, I have him here. Kershaw did it twice, Stripling once, and then Urias once. He pitched 2 batters in the 7th in 1 game. The current non-Kershaw-Buehler starters to throw 85-plus pitches in a game this season, Urias did it twice and May once. So, I get why they do it. Why they do it. It's a short season. There was a short, like, a weird ramp-up, so they don't want to, like, necessarily, like, I guess, over, like, you know, force it. And also, they have like an insane lead. Their position is pretty secure in terms of playoff seeding. And I think in the playoffs, they're clearly going to go. I don't think a lot of those guys are going to get to face the third time through the order outside of Kershaw, Buehler. So, like, I get it, but like from an aesthetic standpoint, it sucks. Like, I don't. It sucks to like just pull guys because of like a design or I don't know. It just feels. Like, I think you got to let them go because at some point, this comes down to like the, it's not completely analogous to, but like almost aside from like Julio Urias' entire career, right? Like, okay, it's unprecedented. We have like a 19-year-old in the majors. He's so accomplished at this date, but we don't want to overwork him. We don't want to overwork because then, okay, next year we'll remove it. Obviously, he had shoulder surgery that delayed part of it, but like, it gets to the point, it's like, when do they get to pitch, right? Like, I think maybe future generations aren't going to go deeper into games. I don't know, just because of the way the game works. But it just seems like there's a lot of attrition in this, especially when you're using relievers a lot. And I think, I don't know if it's necessarily good for the like health of the game long term to do this. I think you should let pitchers go longer if they can. I get why they're doing it. I want to give them a pass because it's a pandemic year and like you just want to sort of get through it at this point. And it's, you know, so I get it, but it's still kind of crappy to watch sometimes.
Something in this is demented, I'm sure, but like kind of likes it. I kind of like that there is just this system, and they stick to it, and they're just going to do it hell or high water. It'd be great if it produced a World Series once in my life,
right?
But I don't know. I like there's it hasn't bothered me as much as I'm sure a lot of other fans.
Well, look, so I think it comes down to this. Like, I think for me, it's more, it's really is more, almost more aesthetic. Like the starting pitchers are the draws, right? Like in games, they were, right?
I'm here for Jake McGee. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And so like, I don't think it's to the extreme where like there's other people who are convinced that Dave Roberts pulling Rich Hill in game two in 2017, like lost the series for them. I'm not in that boat. Because at a certain point, the players do have to produce, and if Kenley doesn't blow that save, they win that series. Also, if the Astros don't cheat, the Dodgers probably win that series. So, I don't think it's that extreme. I don't think it's like, oh, well, they're obviously stupid or anything like that. I just think, from my enjoyment, I like seeing starting pitchers go deep. They don't have to, like, throw 7, 8, 9 innings all the time, but occasionally they can, right? Like, if they don't now, when are they going to, right? Like, you're going to ask a guy later to pitch deeper into games. Well, you've been pulling him at, like, 75 and 80 pitches. At some part of, like developing is, like, learning to pitch, later in the game, how you sort of handle that. And so I think that's part of that's being lost. So I don't like it from that standpoint.
To mention it earlier, this segment, trade deadline, very is hot stove, doesn't get hotter.
I don't remember. I think I said they would trade exactly two people, or trade for exactly two people. I forgot what your answer was, but like whatever it was, we were both over because they did not trade for any people on the active or 40-man roster. They actually subtracted. Which was weird.
Is this? I'm trying to think of a time where, like, it's hard to say this. They were sellers per se,
right?
But they were, and they're the best team in the majors. I can't think of a time where, outside of like, you'll see it now and then to like offset a move or when you take on big salary, like when Stripling originally was going to be traded as part of the Mookie deal. You still don't like it, but you sort of get it. And here just, and I'm sure you'll explain why. I understand why this trade was made, but it's still just weird.
Yeah, it's a little odd. Like, on some level, it's kind of funny if you just, like, sort of divorce everything from it. It's like the Dodgers going, like, look, we're obviously better than everybody. but here you go, other contending team. You have one of our cast-offs, and good luck with that. You know, congratulations on adding a good pitcher.
One thing if they had taken a flyer on reliever or done something like that. They're just like, give us some players later. You figure it out.
So I think part of it was this. It's weird because, okay, so there's two things here, right? Stripling was like clearly like he had lost his spot at that point. Like he technically made his last start. But the next time through, it's like it was pretty clear that the writing was on the wall. That like Gonsolin was going to be the guy, and they were about to like not keep using six starters anymore, and so I think that was part of it, like where they're just like, look, you're not going to be on a starter. So Stripling has pitched in relief over his previous four seasons. He's had a multiple number of roles, so like that would have been fine for him to sort of transition to the bullpen, but I think also like they looked at their bullpen, which is a lot deeper this year, and they're like, I don't know if he has a role there, because even when he did have a role, he didn't pitch much in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And especially not really much in leverage games. So like this isn't like a Kenta Maeda having a dominant like reliever in the eighth guy if you're adding him to the bullpen. So I think it was like he's just extra right now, and this isn't all like cold and like calculating, but I do really think like I'll take them at their word in that they wanted to give like sometimes this happens, right? Like, they wanted to give Ross Dribbling a chance to, like, keep starting. And there were, you know, teams that were interested. So he went to the Blue Jays, and he started for them the other day. So, like, and they're actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're, like, two games back of the Yankees right now for second place in the East, in the AL East. So that's weird. But, like, so I think that was part of it. But also, the
for what it's worth.
Oh, now, geez. Okay,
no, they're
wow.
actually, excuse me, they're ahead of the Yankees.
Wow.
They're 5.5 back on Tampa, but and then the Yankees are 6.5.
That's pretty amazing. So, like, but yeah, so I think that's part of it. But also, they did get, like, so they got two players to be named later. One was named the next day. It was a 2019 second round.
I still love
draft
the player
pick.
To be the, yeah. We have given him a name today.
Yes, exactly. Well, so that was the other thing. Like, there were, like, 14 different MLB trades on Monday that were in Major League Baseball that had a player to be named later, at least one, because you could only trade players on the 60-man player pool this year. So, like, players who aren't in that, they'll just be named after the season once the season's over. So, like, that was part of it. So, the Dodgers did add Kendall Williams is the one pitcher they named. He was a 2019 second round pick. So, honestly, Stripling did have two more years of, like, team control, but I think it was pretty clear that, like, he was further down the totem pole, like, starting wise, and, like, they have other relief options. So I think that was part of it, like, sort of continuing to, like, add to the pipeline of other prospects, like, coming in.
It's so weird that there's, you know, 2019 games left. That's weird. We're talking about trade line with only 19 games left. Where I'm going with this is, so this is a sort of an odd and extremely hypothetical question, but I assume Alex Wood would be sort of the sixth man in the rotation. Who's the next up after that, do you think, in the organization?
So I think it's Mitch White right now. And, like, he came up, he's been up a couple times. He actually pitched an inning in relief. They called him up for that doubleheader. And I think it was, like, I think it had Kershaw not pitched six innings in the first game and they had to use the bullpen a little more, I think maybe he would have started game two to give him a little more length because he's been stretching out at the alternate site. But he ended up not pitching because they just went with the bullpen game for game two.
And with 19 games left and then you don't need five starters, let alone the sixth or the seventh. I don't think it'll come to fruition, but I was just curious about that.
Yeah, so I think, and that's part of it. So I don't, like, if you're asking me right now, like, oh, that was the other thing. So Wood is, like, almost in the same position as Stripling. He's going to be a free agent after the year, so not completely, but he also lost favor. Like, at some point, they decided, because, you know, the old axiom in baseball is you don't really lose your job due to injury. And, like, he was technically in the starting rotation, had one start, was bad, but also was hurt, had a shoulder thing, and then they came back. But, like, some point during the time where he was ramping back up, like, and before they activated him, they said, look, you're going to be in the bullpen. Because they wanted to get him, like, stretched out before they brought him back. But then the day he was supposed to go, like, four innings, he only threw, like, two plus in a simulated game, the one they, like, simulcast on. They streamed it online, I guess. So, like, that was a clear tell that, like, okay, if he's back this year, there also wasn't enough time left of the season. So he's a bullpen role only, and I think he was, like, okay with it generally. I don't think he has a spot on the playoff roster in the bullpen. I could be wrong. But so it's a similar situation. Like, but I don't necessarily think there's a market for Alex Wood right now because he's also dealt with more injury things. He only started, like, seven or eight games last year at all. And there's a outside chance that he could be a better stuff-wise reliever than Stripling. So, like, I guess he could, like, pitch his way onto the playoff roster, but I'm not, like, holding my breath on that. So that it was weird how, like, you know, those two situations were handled. I don't think they would have got, like, a second round 2019 draft pick for Wood. So that's also part of it. But, so it was, like, it was weird. So, like, so sort of pushing Wood and Stripling out of the rotation, you know, in the last couple weeks, basically it's a vote of confidence for Tony Gonsolin. Dustin May was already in the rotation, but it's a vote of confidence for him, and then it strengthens Julio Urias. Like, two of those three are going to start playoff games. So that's a good sign. And like, I think going forward, they're going to rely on them going into like next year and stuff. So, and then also, since we last recorded, Gavin Lux was called up and basically like the starter at second base against righties now. So like, he hasn't done much yet, but like, he's going to get some run here. So like, they are like sort of mixing in the young guys. So that was also part of it. And sort of, you know, just keep that sort of pipeline churning, I guess, of talent coming up. The other sort of notable trade deadline thing that didn't involve the Dodgers, but the Padres traded for nine players. Yeah. So, I guess Mike Clevinger was the big get for them, who with Zach Plesac in Cleveland went out partying one night when they were in Chicago, and both got optioned to the minors because the team like rebelled against them for breaking like COVID protocols. But he's actually a really good pitcher. He's been excellent the last couple years. So they got Clevinger. They got like three or four relievers, two catchers who can actually hit, and their catchers were terrible at the plate. So like, they really improved themselves. Also, they only gave up like one of their top 10 prospects, I believe, Taylor Trammell. And all these moves, for the most part, like help the Padres like in the next few years beyond this year. So this wasn't like a selling out, going for broke this year. That said, it would have been justified if it was. Like, the Padres are probably like the second best team in the National League. They just happen to be in the same division as the Dodgers. So, like, they're excellent, and they're going to be the challenger to the Dodgers the next few years. And I think they strengthen themselves long-term with those moves. But, you know, also, there's this thing, too, now where, you know, they won the trade deadline, and, oh, man, San Diego, World Series favorite. Like, you know, everyone wants to be the new guy. Like, we saw this in the NBA a little bit. It's not the same. Because I think they're better than this, but like, the Trailblazers were really hot in the bubble, and then they're, oh man, this has to be like the greatest 8 seed ever, and then they won the first game against the Lakers. Are they going to sweep the Lakers, and then they didn't win a game? So like, I don't think the difference is that stark between the Dodgers and Padres, but the Dodgers are better. But people are like bending themselves into pretzels, like figuring out ways why the Padres are going to beat them. They very well could beat the Dodgers in a playoff series. But it's not; they're not likely to. The Dodgers are still going to be favored no matter how they match up. So, not terribly worried there. That said, they are a very good team and good enough to like win it all if everything breaks right. So, I don't want to discount that. It's just like, I don't want to be like, oh well, they're the clear favorites now, because the Dodgers are still clearly the very best team.
I think I was trying to look up. You have a trivia question coming for me, and I was. Looking up if Ross Stripling kept the same number with the Blue Jays.
No, he went to 48.
Yeah.
I didn't see why. I didn't look into that.
But ESPN, I think, played a little video sound that probably made it to the podcast. So sorry. Oh. Sorry, listeners. That's ESPN's auto video play fault.
Man, I hope we don't. Hope they don't come after us.
you played 3 seconds of a stock sound clip. That'll be $8 billion.
That's all right. So Ross Stripling, now traded, now an old friend, literally. He and his wife are expecting a baby. They just put out a thing. They put out a picture on Twitter with them, like, holding Chick-fil-A, which was like the most Texas birth announcement I've ever seen. It's kind of funny. In his career, Ross Stripling, he's 1/10 all time in Fangraphs pitching WAR at 5.0 wins above replacement, tied with Tom Niedenfuhr, among others. Now, another list, Ross Stripling, he made 59 starts with the Dodgers. He also relieved 84 games. He's one of 120 pitchers to start at least 50 games for the Dodgers. Where does his ERA plus rank among those 120 pitchers? And bonus, what is his ERA plus with the Dodgers?
We'll figure that out after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Where does Ross Stripling's ERA plus rank as a... So is this his ERA plus, not as ERA plus as a starter, right?
Right. Total ERA plus.
Amongst people who have started at least 50 games.
With the Dodgers, yep. 120 of those pitchers. Where on that list of 120 does he rank?
In honor of his new Toronto number, how about... No, LA number? Where do I want to lean? Because it lets me go 68th.
You should have went with your first.
No, 48th.
Okay, so he's actually... Okay, so on the Baseball Reference list, he's listed 45th.
But
he
should have gone
45th. He's technically tied for 42nd. There is a five-way tie. Do you know what his ERA plus is, knowing that where he ranks now?
Man, I don't. Like, 108.
Man, you were close. 110.
Okay, all right.
So he's tied with Chad Billingsley.
Hey.
Tied with Don Sutton, who started 533 games with the Dodgers, which is hilarious to see. And also hilarious to know that he also pitched 8 other seasons without the Dodgers. So, or 7 others, I guess. But, so he's at one. Ramon Martinez had a 109. So Ross Stripling, better than Ramon Martinez. That's not exactly how it works, but, you know, just funny how that sort of... Randy Wolf, 111. there's a lot of fun names on this list. There's someone named... tied for 51st with Fernando Valenzuela is Doug McWeeny. With a 107 ERA plus.
I think the most surprising thing here isn't Don Sutton. It's that Randy Wolf started 50 games.
52. Two different years.
There's so many players like that where you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that's right.
And I think, so he started 52 games. I'm pretty sure in 47 of those, he gave up 2 or 3 runs in the first inning and somehow still made it through 6 innings. The classic Randy Wolf.
Well, I'm happy about that. I had a good idea where he was relative. It's just how many.
No, you for our intents and purposes, you nailed that trivia question. That was excellent.
All right. Are you going to nail this Dodgers rewind?
I am. Oh, and it's someone who actually got nailed. to quote the McLaughlin group or the Sinatra group from SNL, I excuse myself because I've done them both. No, so Justin Turner, currently on the injured list with a left hamstring strain. This happened, it first started before we last recorded. A lot has happened since we last recorded, obviously. But August 22nd against the Rockies, he was hit by a pitch on his hamstring. Then 6 days later, when they were in Texas, he stole a base, was successful, but hurt his hamstring on the steal, and he hasn't played since. During the doubleheader, which was the day before that steal, he was hit by a pitch in both games of the doubleheader. This took a little while to look up because you have to sort of scroll through. I just basically looked for every Dodger to get hit by a pitch and sorted by date and tried to find the doubleheaders. But he's the first Dodger to get hit in both games of a doubleheader since 1935, and this person's name was Buster Mills. He was an outfielder. It was September 23rd, 1935. The Brooklyn Dodgers were at the Phillies. He was an outfielder. He played for six different teams in parts of seven seasons, but it was strung across like a bunch of years, 1934 to 1946. So he was like up and down in the minors a lot. Now, a couple facts about Buster Millings, which I love. He was born and raised in I didn't even know this town existed, but there's a city in Texas called Ranger, Texas. How have the Rangers not moved there? Like, have they not annexed the city somehow? But anyway, also my favorite thing about Buster Mills, I think, is that his full name is Colonel Buster Mills, and his dad's name is Elvis. So they predated the Elvis Colonel relationship of the 1960s. So kudos, like 5 decades. He was an all-around athlete. He was an all-Big Six quarterback with Oklahoma in 1930. Yeah, and so, yeah, well, it's funny because, like, they're the Big 12 now, but yeah. When I grew up, it was the Big Eight.
Yeah.
And, like, and obviously, and there's people, like, who remember the Pac-8 of all things. It's weird. But, so with the Dodgers, I didn't see who got hurt, but someone must have gotten hurt because they bought him from the Cardinals, essentially, in 1935, but it was September, and they were, like, not a good team. But he played 17 games for them down the stretch, 17 out of 20. He started 15. He was, he was 12 for 65 with a home run, 214, 323, 339. He got hit by a pitch 4 times, including the two in the doubleheader. Just from his Sabre bio, this is how they sort of described him. I'm just going to quote here. Given a shot with the Brooklyn Dodgers in September, the, quote, fast, sturdy, right-handed hitter, unquote, pounded the first pitch he saw for a double in his debut, and he drove in a run. And he was one of 4 cited for some, quote, unquote, brilliant fielding in the September 13th game against the Cubs. That was his first game. Then his second game, the next day, he hit a 3-run homer off Charlie Root. Also at Wrigley, Root was the one who gave up the called shot to Babe Ruth in the World Series like 3 years prior. So a pretty famous pitcher. Mills later became a coach with the White Sox, Reds, and Red Sox. He managed for 8 games the Reds in 1953. Rogers Hornsby unexpectedly quit in essentially the last week of the season, and Mills went 4-4. So he has a managerial record as well. My trivia, since this is hit by pitch based. Mm-hmm. Who holds the Dodgers record for getting hit by pitch in one game?
Is it not Justin Turner?
It's not Justin Turner. I can tell you.
Uh-huh.
No, I won't tell you. I won't say that.
Hints? Well, zero hints?
It's more than 2. So Justin Turner's been hit twice as a Dodger, 3 times. Chase Utley has been hit. He's been hit twice, 3 times. Buster Mills was hit twice, once. So he got hit twice in one game and then doubleheader the other two. But yeah, so it's more than 2. I'll even tell you it's 3. But only one player did it, at least dating back to 1901.
Man, I don't even know how to...
I'll give you another hint.
Yeah.
It's in the Jacob era.
Jacob era. Let's say Eric Karras.
No, I'm trying to think. I don't think these two ever played together. Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think if they would imagine they. I don't. They almost certainly didn't. But it was Nomar Garciaparra.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I just had to go with longevity. Like, who had the most games? Most opportunities?
I was trying to think if they played together on the A's, but he was not traded away from the Red Sox yet when Karras was on the A's. So, but it was 2006, July 3rd. He was 1-for-2 in the game with 2 RBIs, but also got hit 3 times. So, crazy game.
Well, it's that time.
Yay!
With Gene and Craig. We love them!
The first question from our friend Craig. As of this writing, the Dodgers' all-time leaders in home runs as a designated hitter are Corey Seager and Matt Kemp with 3 home runs. Can Eric name the leaders for the other NL West teams? Here are his hints. And we'll do this one at a time. The Dynamax leader was a member of their World Series winning team.
So my first instinct was just to say Luis Gonzalez.
Okay, I'm actually going to keep going because I have to find these
That's
answers.
Fine. That's fine.
I'm just now realizing that I don't have them. So, yeah, we'll go with that. Giants, you don't need a hint.
Rich Aurelia. No, Barry
Marquise
Bonds.
Marquise Grissom. Yeah. The Padres leader, he led all the Padres in B-War on their last World Series team.
So that was 98. Man, I guess. So Greg Vaughn hit 50 home runs that year. Yeah, Gwynn was awesome, though. I just don't think he played enough. So and Finley was really good in center. But I'm going to go. Wait, so he had to play for a little while. No, I'll just go Greg Vaughn.
Correct. You were wrong on the Diamondbacks. Jay Bell.
Nice.
Answers. And for the Rockers, leader, last DH homer was more than 10 years ago.
So just trying to think, just talking myself through this, Matt Holliday.
Larry Walker.
Nice. Hall of Famer, Larry Walker.
One random note, Matt Kemp is a homer behind the Padres and Rockies leaders in that category.
Ha, nice.
Stick it out.
Well, fun fact, I think, about the Dodgers, designated hitters. So, but before, the Dodgers historically have been terrible. They were okay like the last couple years at DH, in interleague play. But like before this season, the Dodgers hit six home runs as a DH. The DHs hit six home runs in 23 years of interleague play. This year they have seven in 41 games, so doing pretty well.
Get the spreadsheet out. How many wins will the Dodgers have if they happen to clinch their eighth straight NL West title?
I read this as the wins at the time of clinching. I think that's what Craig meant.
I think that's what he means.
So, and not what they'll finish with. So right now, the Dodgers are 30-11. The Padres are 25-17. The Dodgers haven't played their Sunday game yet. But so they're 5.5 up with 19 to play, 18 for the Padres. The magic number is 14. I think the Dodgers, you're not going to rely on San Diego losing a ton. So I think the Dodgers need to win more than the Padres will lose. So I will say 39.
That's exactly what I was going to go with.
Yeah. So we'll just both be right on this one.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I was going to say 40, but that was because I had them winning yesterday. They didn't.
I almost said 38.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a trivia question for Jacob. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah.
Mookie Betts is trying to be the fifth Dodger to lead the team in both home runs and stolen bases in a single season. The first two were tied for the team leads in home runs. In 1972, Willie Davis led the team in stolen bases and was tied with Frank Robinson for lead in home runs. And in 1979, Davey Lopes was again the stolen base leader, and he also tied with Steve Garvey and Ron Say with 28 homers. Can Jacob name the other two? So, confession time, I cheated, and that's only because this question infuriated me as I was trying to guess the answer. But I will explain to you exactly my journey before arriving to the right answers. And I think I would have done this before I started doing my research. But the reason why I was inspired to do research first, do you know?
So I actually wrote about this exact thing a couple weeks ago.
Okay. So I figured you did.
Yeah.
So it's infuriating. First two names I thought of just sort of lazily were Matt Kemp and Raul Mondesi. I think that's fair, right?
Yep,
Who you think of when you think...
Mondesi was literally the first 30-30 guy in the franchise history, so...
And then I thought, right after that, I thought of Sean Green. I always remember he actually stole a lot of bases early on in the Dodgers' career. And then while I was stewing on those three names, trying to figure out which of the two I was going to pick, I remembered one of these answers was last year.
Yep.
You know, not exactly a season where you would think, oh, for sure that led the team in stolen bases, but Cody Bellinger did last year. And then I was pretty damn confident Matt Kemp's 2011 campaign being the other. So I was so angry that Raul Mondesi and Sean Green never did this that I had to kind of research
go into that and research a little bit on why and what happened. And it's basically entirely Eric Young's fault.
Yep. There. Speaking of Eric Young, someone. Oh, so I guess Raimel Tapia the other night for the Rockies, he had a leadoff home run at Dodger Stadium, and the Rockies like PR team like put out a thing saying like I forgot the exact reason like they put this out, but it was like a list of players who had hit a leadoff home run, and I don't remember if it was like at Dodger Stadium or just something. There was some other hook to it, but I laughed because both Eric Young Sr. and Eric Young Jr. were on the list. I was like, "Oh, that's awesome!" So like any time that like yeah,
and I'm joking a little bit. Piazza stole some home run titles away from Mondesi. Sean Green did lead the Dodgers in stolen bases in 2000. Do you know? Where was he on home runs? I get a trivia question.
Okay, so I'm so the two 40 years were, well, 2002 was one of them. I don't remember if 2001 or 2003 was the other, but like I know Sheffield had more
correct
home runs in 2000. I want to say Green had 24 homers.
Correct.
So just thinking of that team. Man, 2000. Did Leduc hit 25?
No.
I honestly don't remember. I'm blanking. So, oh wait, 2000 was.
I'm laughing.
That was Eric Karras's one of his 300 years, I believe.
Yes, he had 31. So Sean Green was tied for third with Todd Hundley.
Oh, nice.
Paul
Aduke. I had
you
wrong
were right
answer.
There. So a Dodger catcher did almost hit 25. Combined, they hit 26. Then in 2001, he did lead the team in home runs with 49.
Yeah.
And then he was amongst the first the nominal starters that Baseball Reference gets you, he did lead in stolen bases, and I was so excited that it was Sean Green. Tom Goodwin stole two more than him.
Yeah, classic Tom Goodwin.
So that leads to my frustration. So with 3 weeks left, using the 1-10 scale, with 10 being is definitely making the roster. Tell us what you think of the following Dodgers and their chances to play in the postseason. You normally like to give bizarre percentages on this, right, but you're stuck to 10 numbers here.
Yeah.
So
I can tell you I'm stuck to two numbers.
Okay.
given these questions.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So the first crop we have, players on the IL, Justin Turner.
So he has a hamstring thing. He's eligible to come off, I believe, Thursday. I forget exactly when. Or maybe it's Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday. But like it's going to be at some point this week that he's there. He's a 10, like easily.
Okay. Joe Kelly.
So Joe Kelly has been out for about 3 weeks with the shoulder thing. He also still has to serve his suspension when he gets activated. Now, he is pitching Monday in his second, like facing live batters situation in the last couple days. He said like that we interviewed him today, and he said like that was his, it's a big like day just in terms of gauging where he's at. But he basically said like he needs to see, he needs to prove to himself like that his control is there, or that he's like ready-ish. Even if he's not ready like Monday, or like doesn't show that he's ready Monday, he's close enough to that. He's going to get activated with ample enough time. So I think, just given the amount of doubt, I want to say he's a 10 because he probably is a 10. But just to factor in that maybe something comes up and he doesn't quite have it, I'll say an 8.
I thought you were sticking the two numbers. So we'll see. Tens or eights.
I thought, no, I thought it would get the other. It's going to be lower. Okay. Yeah.
Pedro Baez, 10 or an 8.
So he is, I think, farther along than Kelly. He, I believe, faced hitters already and might do it again. And plus, he doesn't have to serve a suspension, so he'll pitch sooner. But he's going to be back at some point this week, I believe. And I think he's a 10.
Scott Alexander.
So they just optioned him the other day. He was like fine early, but he's walked a bunch of guys. He's been kind of all over the place, as he tends to do. I don't want to say, like he said 1 to 10. My first instinct was to say 0, but I don't think it's a 0. And they have a ton of lefties, and like Kolarik has like leapfrogged him in the lefty group, at least. And there's more besides that.
I have a question here.
So I think he's a 1.
Okay. I think I agree. But one thing I did find a little interesting in watching them play, and I'm surprised I don't know this, but I don't. The runner on second, is that a thing in the playoffs? During extra innings?
No.
Okay.
No,
it's not. Because that was seemed to be his other big role, Scott Alexander, was the guy we want to get a ground ball to induce a double play in this silly situation. So
that's true. But that's also like what Kolarik
yep,
does.
Absolutely.
So like yeah. So,
yeah, I completely agreed, but it just made me think about that. I also didn't think that rule would be in play, but I got nothing else this year. What a
there are going to be 28 man rosters in the playoffs, so that is sort of a thing. But not the extra inning rule.
All right, the next one I'm going to let you say. You're going to be my pronunciation guide.
Cabert.
All right, I would have been right. Yay!
I doubted myself. So, I guess. I want to say a 1 on him because I just don't think he's going to be on the. I don't think they're going to carry 3 catchers. They're, you know, they have enough hitters outside of that, I think, to not carry him. So I want to say 1, but just in the off chance that because catching, like, Austin Barnes, like, got hit in the neck and he had a big welt yesterday in that game. Like, catchers just get nicked and hurt easily. So, like, I will bump him up to a 3.
So, assuming Edwin Rios is the swap when Justin Turner is ready.
He's not. I won't assume that.
Okay. You're all right. So, we've got the current roster. In terms of just hitter off bench, we have to add Justin Turner. Where does Cabert rank just in general as someone we want to get a hit off the bench?
Okay, so they have 13 active players now,
mm-hmm.
position players. So adding Turner is 14, and I think that's what they'll carry in the playoffs. Beyond that, like, I want to say, like, McKinstry might be ahead of Ruiz, but that might not be true. So, like, maybe he's, like, closer than I'm giving him credit for, but... I think they would sooner consider adding like a Terrence Gore at that point.
Okay.
Than adding Ruiz as a third catcher.
The fifth question is, I was listening to a farmer talk about melons, as you do, and he was emphatic that the seeded watermelons are better than seedless. It makes sense though, and I've never compared them myself. As we hit the end of the summer soon, do you prefer seeded or seedless watermelon? And what do you think of watermelon flavor in candies and drinks?
So, I like seedless just because I'm lazy. Like, I don't want to, like, pick out the seeds and stuff. I guess I haven't eaten enough watermelon to notice a discernible difference. Like, it's completely different food, so this sounds blasphemous or just stupid. But, like... It's like boneless chicken versus chicken on the bone.
No, I have a big opinion there.
So like there's so maybe the flavor is there if there's seeds, but like I can't say I've felt a difference. One time I used to go like early elementary school. Like I went to the boys club after school a lot and did some activities and stuff there, and I believe. At one point, I was part of a watermelon eating contest. It was like straight out of like Stand By Me, except not pies. Yeah, like that was fun. I think I won. I can't remember. You would think that would be. I should know that detail, but I just remember like I was. I don't know. I was really good at it, and I like watermelon. I don't eat enough watermelon. I think. So I need to incorporate, next time I go to the store, I'm going to get watermelon just because of this question.
How often has that been a thing for you on this show when we get these food questions?
Well, it's like the shiny object, right? It's like, ooh, like, that looks good. Like, so like, of course it'll like.
Do you think Craig has an in on big watermelon? And he
wait.
Wants...
Oh, yeah.
So
you know what?
I am not a giant watermelon fan. So
like
I'm going to let
the
expert answer. I'm going to put Melissa on real quick.
Nice.
Hold on.
Yes, we have a guest.
Seeded or non-seeded watermelon? That's the microphone.
I've got to say that seeded has a better texture and flavor, but I always go for seedless because I'm lazy.
Melissa, a woman after my own heart. I love it.
Is that what you think?
That's what I said. I said it's probably better, but I always go seedless because I'm lazy. So it's perfect.
Yeah, I ate a seeded watermelon the other day, and I feel like I ate about 10 seeds because I just couldn't be bothered to find them in there.
Those will grow in your stomach.
It's like buying shelled peanuts. Like, it's cool, it's probably good, but like, it's so much of a mess. Like, why go through the bother of that? Like,
right?
That's weird.
Exactly. Yeah. Jacob, do you eat watermelon?
Not really.
He doesn't eat watermelon.
Well, this is a fun divergence from our usual food question. I'm very grateful that you were on.
Yes, absolutely. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you on.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, real expert opinion.
That was beautiful, and I enjoyed that she used the exact word I did.
she came down right when I put her on, so she did not hear your answer. I can verify.
She was in a cone of silence. This isn't a quiz show situation.
No, she was upstairs.
Okay, good.
So that's it.
You forgot you didn't forget. You asked it. I just haven't answered it. The second part of the question. The only other thing, like candy and drinks, like watermelon, like drinks. I can't say I've drank a lot of stuff that is watermelon based, but that it seems a little too light for me, or like there's not a lot in there.
Or candies, it's the opposite, where it's completely overdone. You're anti watermelon candy, right?
No, I was going to say watermelon jolly. Oh, to Melissa. Okay, sorry. Watermelon Jolly Ranchers, though, solid.
No, I think they're gross.
Yeah, well, it's fine. you can be wrong.
So there you go. Are you going to go buy some watermelon?
I am. We're going to stop the podcast now. And thanks for listening, everybody. Go out and eat some watermelon, and we'll talk to you next week.